This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Kevin Randall.
Not good enough?
That's excellent, Kevin Randall. Gene and Randall.
Mercy.
So it's like, I got a double Randall here. I've got a Randall middle name and a Randall last name. So it sounds like a band, the double Randalls. Is that like
Why
a rock
Randalls
band?
Why are Randalls always the villains, though? You know, like in Monsters, Inc., Randall is the evil lizard that changes color and shape. That's an interesting character. And in Outlander, I think it's Randall is also the evil person in the past that the character goes back to. Sometimes I feel like I'm getting a little shortchanged with this name, but yeah. How about you, Kevin?
The problem I have is spelling Randall, R-A-N-D-L-E. And you go to fill out a form or whatever, and people are filling out a form, and you spell the name for them, I always go R-A-N-D-L-E, and they will write down R-A-N-D-A-L-E. They always got to put an extra A in there for some reason.
Yeah, and that would be wrong for me on both accounts. So I've got it the same way, too. Mine ends in A-L-L, Randall. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. So if we go back to ufology here for a minute, and we're talking about the Zond reentry, looking a lot like the object seen in the Wethead case. That reminds me a lot of the Fox Lake sighting. Now, are you familiar with that one?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to see if I could get your opinion on that. But that was a bunch of people in the Yukon claimed that they saw a football field-sized UFO near Fox Lake in Canada's Yukon Territory, and they described rows of multicolored lights, said that the craft blocked out the stars and shot beams of light down onto the ground. And at some time later, there was some people that found that there was a re-entry of a Russian spacecraft of some kind that was burnt up in the atmosphere, and they figured that that's what it probably was. And yet it doesn't explain all of the accounts. So does Chile's Wethead case, are all of the facets of that case explained adequately by a bolide?
Yes. They saw it in the distance coming toward their aircraft as a bright light. They're at 5,000 feet, and then it flashes by them to the side, and it looks like it has a lighted cockpit and a number of square windows and then a flame out the back.
Right.
And it was in sight for 5 seconds or 7 seconds, something like that. And then it seemed to climb up into the clouds. But I think that's an optical illusion based on where the cloud deck was as they were flying along. If you go take a look on YouTube, there used to be something called Meteor Compilation. I think it was 3 minutes and 19 seconds. And what somebody had done was put together all these videos of that people had gotten of meteor falls, and you would see the things breaking up. And in a number of them, it looked like as it broke up, it would look like you had a bright cockpit and then a number of windows behind it. And if you've caught that for just a second out of the corner of your eye, or just not get a really good look at it, as your mind perceives this, that's the thing you think of. You think of a cockpit and square windows. If you look at the Zond 4 reentry, we know what it was because a lot of other people saw it and knew what was going on, but you had a group of people scattered around who thought that it was some kind of an airplane crash or something like that, and they were drawing a bright cockpit-like area with a number of square windows and a flame out the back. I mean, it was a perfect match. Well, the drawings are similar. Let's put it that way. Not a perfect match, but the drawings are similar to what Childs and Whitted had written down or drawn for the Air Force investigators right after their sighting. The other thing is, if you go back and you read the Air Force file on it, when Childs and Whitted were interviewed, neither one of them said anything about turbulence or rocking the airplane. But later on in the newspaper accounts, they said, well, there was turbulence as the thing flashed by. Well, there was no turbulence because it was a meteor and it was far, far away. And since it was early in the morning, you know, there weren't a lot of people to have seen that fall. So I think that, you know, in that case with Childs and Wood, that is a perfect solution for that case. I mean, the facts fit the case, and I think we can eliminate that case. Although in 1948, it was a case that disturbed the military because they were
dealing with rockets, right? And so this thing is like kind of like a rocket.
It looked like a rocket, and they weren't as familiar with what meteor falls look like and that sort of thing. I mean, our scientific knowledge has increased exponentially since that time, and we can see it now for what it was. But at that time, it disturbed them because here were two experienced pilots. I think they'd both been in the Army Air Forces during the Second World War, and they were two experienced pilots, so they were observers who should have been able to tell what they were looking at. So that disturbed them greatly. I think in today's environment, we'd look at that and say, yeah, it's pretty much clear that it was a reentry, the fall of a meteorite. So I think that case is explained in that way. And I think that when we look at some of these older cases, we see explanations that make sense today for us that they couldn't have come up back in the early 1950s or the late 1940s, just because our scientific knowledge is advanced to the point where we can recognize some of these things. And sometimes it's just a matter, I think, of incompetence. The once you got past the Ruppelt years in Project Blue Book, there was a real attitude that there was no such thing as flying saucers. So they were just investigating them as public relations as opposed to really solving a case.
That was because of the whole Robertson panel thing, where it became a policy pretty much to downplay UFOs as much as possible, and any ones that couldn't be explained were not to be discussed with the public.
The Air Force regulations pointed that out. The Air Force regulations said if you have an explanation, you are free to express it to the press. You know, this was an airplane, this was birds, this was whatever. If you cannot identify it, then your answer to the press is they need to talk to the public affairs office at the Pentagon. And they would release information about it. That was in the regulations.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, Ruppelt, he took great exception to having to ridicule his own pilots if necessary. And it wasn't long after that he was either transferred or reassigned. I don't know whether he did it voluntarily or they arbitrarily said, okay, well, we want you off this project. Do you know the details about his leaving?
I think it was just he was after 18 months at Project Blue Book, he was due for another assignment. I'll tell you one thing. If I was Ruppelt, I would have been pissed with getting the assignment to Project Blue Book. Here I am. I'm a combat veteran from World War II. I'm recalled to active duty for the Korean War. And what do? You put me in this little crappy office to investigate flying saucers, for crying out loud. I've been recalled to active duty to do this and put my life on hold. And I got to go out and play with flying saucers. Are you kidding me? I would have been really annoyed, and I would have been agitating to get a different assignment back into the combat area. I wouldn't want to be left out of the war.
Now, it's interesting, too, about Ruppelt. Did he know he was ill while he was at Blue Book? Because it wasn't too many years later before he died of a heart attack. He was in his late 30s, as I recall.
Maybe it was just the way it was in those days. I think he was a little older than that. I think it was late 30s, but he died very young of a heart attack. You are absolutely correct on that. But I don't think he was ill during Project Blue Book.
I'm looking here, by the way, about Ruppelt. He was 37.
Oh, he was, though.
He was 30. That's the same age, by the way. I think the same age as Bobby Darin when he died of a heart condition. But that was several years after Ruppelt was involved with Project Blue Book.
Yeah, I think it was 1960, wasn't it?
He died in 1960.
Yeah, I don't think he was ill while he was at Project Blue Book. I think that he attempted to, I guess, organize it so that it was more of an investigative organization than it was paying lip service to the investigative aspects of it. He tried to bring a little bit of expertise to it.
Well, he's the one who hired Hynek.
No, Hynek was on board at Sign. I think Hynek came aboard in Sign.
We've got more to come, and we'll figure this out. We'll sort all this out. Or not. We've got Randall, Kevin, and Gene. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
How well and how fast does Heart and Body Extract work to improve blood circulation? Listen.
My name is Ellis, and I'm 66 years old, and I live in Jacksonville, Florida. 2 years ago, I was diagnosed as having clogged arteries. I had 70% blockage in one artery leading to my heart. They wanted me to go on Plavix, but I refused, knowing the negative side effects.
Heart and Body Extract is a unique balance, synergy, and proportion of herbs reaching from head to toe at maximum absorption around 95% at the cellular level.
Within the first month, I felt a dramatic difference. The heaviness in my legs was reduced, and within 2 months, I felt completely normal.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract. Heart and Body Extract comes with a 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract. Call 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Many people believe they don't control their own destiny. Let them continue just getting by while you make the choice to do something about your future. Imagine working from home, earning the income you deserve. Just visit startlivingyoung.com and click on the Be Your Own Boss tab. Discover Juness, a state-of-the-art global health company with over $1 billion a year in sales. They'll provide all the tools you need to succeed. Visit startlivingyoung.com today and click on the Be Your Own Boss tab. Your destiny awaits at startlivingyoung.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll-free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Okay, we're trying to sort out here, Dr. Hynek. I agree with you, Kevin. It was before Project Blue Book. He was with them quite a long time.
Yeah. So was Ruppelt himself, when he got back into it in 1950, and then he took over Project Grudge in 51, and that's when he hired Hynek. So, yeah, it would have been before Blue Book, but not before Ruppelt. And then Ruppelt headed Blue Book until late 1953.
I think Hynek came on when it was still Project Sign.
He may have been consulted, but
as
an official person with it, like I've done some research into it as well, and this is the best that I can find.
I've been looking over the Wikipedia on Ed Ruppelt. Now, apparently he joined the project in late 51, and then in 53... apparently, he requested reassignment from Blue Book. He requested reassignment, just as a reference, point of reference. I think part of that is what Ruppelt wrote about it himself and also Jerry Clark's research for his UFO encyclopedia.
Well, if Jerry Clark said it, I'll believe what Jerry Clark says because, you know, he has gone into great depth on this. But Ruppelt investigated the Lubbock lights, and that was when he started, it was still Project Grudge, so that would have been 51. Lubbock Lights was, I think, August, September of 1951. And Ruppelt was down there as a, I think he was actually only a lieutenant at the time. And the one thing that I remember about that in reading the file is that he tried to intimidate Carl Hart Jr. to see if he would admit that he had hoaxed the thing. I mean, what he was attempting to do was learn whether or not it was a hoax, and suggesting to Hart that, you know, if you're not telling the truth here, you can be in big trouble for it. So if Hart had faked the photographs, Hart would admit it at that point. The other thing is I talked to Hart in what I think 1993, because I was in Lubbock doing research on the Roswell case, and on a lark, I looked Hart's name up in the Lubbock phone book, and it was there. I couldn't believe it. So I called him, and we chatted about the sighting for a while, and he told me that he still didn't know what he'd photographed. And I think that, you know, that speaks a little bit to the authenticity of the photograph, simply because we know that teenage boys, and Hart was 19 when he took the pictures, teenage boys who fake UFO photographs eventually come clean. They tell us, yeah, I made that up. I faked that stuff. I think there was some out of Michigan, a sort of a oval-shaped craft with an antenna on the rear that Hynek really liked, and came out later that the boys who took the photographs had faked them. But, and you know, you hear that all the time. And so if Hart had faked the photographs, I think by 1993, he would have been in his 60s. There would have been no ramifications for faking the photographs if he'd faked them or knew what they were. I think he'd have told me, or he'd have told somebody else when they talked about it. So, that to me speaks volumes about the authenticity of the photographs. At least Hart didn't fake them. Doesn't mean they're alien spacecraft. Means he didn't fake them.
Something what bothers me, I guess, over the years is the fact that there are really so few clear UFO photos. And lights in the sky can be anything. You've got to coordinate them with someone's eyewitness testimony. Today it's so easy to fake a UFO, you can hardly take them seriously. But with all the sightings out there, nowadays we understand with ubiquitous smartphones, because everybody's looking down. Even when they cross the street, they're looking down. But back in those days, when you just had these basic Kodak cameras and such, or a Polaroid or something, I kind of wonder why there aren't more pictures.
Well, because you weren't carrying your camera around. You know, everybody's got a camera in their smartphone, too.
But they don't think to take it out.
Well, no, they didn't see the lights because they were looking at the smartphone. But there are some interesting photographs. There's the movie taking in Montana in 1951 by Nick Mariana that I don't think has been adequately explained. Doesn't mean it's an alien spacecraft. I mean, it's not been adequately explained. There was a film taken in Tremonton, Utah by the Navy Warrant Officer, Delbert Newhouse, who I talked to at one point, years later, of course. And he said that, you know, the spots on the film that you see, and you can look it up on YouTube and see the film. It's, you know, the Newhouse film or the Nick Mariana film. You can see those on YouTube in today's world. But he said that the object had moved off a great deal from where they were when they first spotted him. By the time he got the car stopped, he got his camera out of the trunk. He managed to get the film in the camera and started filming. They had moved off a great deal of distance, and so you couldn't really see the shape of them. They're just lights in the sky. The only thing that worries me about that is, I think Ruppelt said this as well, that seagulls, he would studying seagulls out in California, and they looked an awful lot like the images on the film that Newhouse had taken. There's a music video, Hadaway doing What Is Love on the KM music channel. The only reason I bring this up, because there's some girls dancing in the foreground, and you see these white lights go across in the background that looks for exactly like the images on the Tremonton film. And one of them comes down close, and you can see the wings flapping, and you realize that it's a gull. But the image on that film just struck me as looking an awful lot like the film that Newhouse took. But with the Mariana film, you don't have that sort of problem. And there's foreground detail for you to look at and all of that. So, I mean, you've got to take a look at all of that, and you've got to look at it in today's environment. It's so easy to fake anything. A 10-year-old kid with a computer can make an incredible computer-generated image. It'd be difficult to tell from the real thing that it's been artificially manipulated. Russ Estes had done, quite a number of years ago, had done a film like that. He made the UFO look really, really obviously faked so that it would never, ever be suggested it was real, but he wanted to demonstrate how easy it was in the environment with the computers that he had and the equipment he had and the knowledge he had to make a really good film of a UFO. And he even did the narration for it. The image of the UFO was done so that it could never be mistaken for a real thing. But, you know, the point simply is, in today's environment, it's very simple to do that. Back 50, 60 years ago, people didn't carry their cameras around. Some people were loath to shoot anything like that because film was expensive and you had to get it developed. It wasn't like a digital camera where you can take hundreds of thousands of pictures and put them on your computer for no cost at all. And so there's, you know, all kinds of things that came into play in the 1950s. The McMinnville photograph of the disc, there were two, I think they took two pictures, and then they didn't get it developed right away because there was still film left and they didn't want to waste the film. So, I mean, it's a different way of thinking about photographing stuff in that environment as well. Not to mention, you know, as you said, people aren't looking up. They're looking down at their phones and walking into streetlights and falling over hedges.
I'll tell you what I also see, which troubles me. We're not troubled with Kevin Randall, J. Randall Murphy, Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
The United States of Empire is a book that claims the United States is the empire of the world. George Washington had warned us against foreign wars. The United States of Empire shows that World Wars I and II left England broken. Its former colony, the U.S., had to save the empire. Was there ever a vote? Who do we fight for? The Deep State began with World War I. The United States of Empire by James Dunn. Available at Amazon Books.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Blockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. BlockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at BlockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. BlockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
The governor of Virginia is under fire, first because of comments he made in support of allowing late-term abortions when the fetus is unable to survive after birth. Then a photo surfaced of him and another person dressed in blackface and a KKK robe from when he was in medical school. WTKR-TV's Margaret Cavanaugh reports.
The governor acknowledges the hurt inflicted by the picture, but says in his video message that he does not want to step down.
And I am ready to do the hard work of regaining your trust. I have spent the past year as your governor fighting for Virginia that works better for all people.
The governor came under a firestorm of criticism this week after he talked about late-term abortions. During this interview, he claims he was describing a medical situation in rare circumstances and says his comments were taken out of context.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-561-5716. That's 800-561-5716. Again, 800-561-5716.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
Did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
So we have people crossing the street, and they look down at their smartphones. And I do a little of the ride-sharing, Lyft, Uber stuff. So I get to see people because I have to avoid hitting them when I'm taking a rider from one destination to another. The phenomenon I see, unfortunately, is people not recognizing what I was taught when I was a child, which is when you cross the street, look both ways. And I see so many people just walk, oblivious to everything. Forget about the smartphone. They're looking straight ahead. They're hoping praying the driver will recognize them in time before crushing them to smithereens.
I saw someone get their life saved by a person on the sidewalk because someone just came along. They were looking down at their phone. They went to step out, and they went to step out right in front of a bus. But this person just grabbed the back of their coat and pulled them back onto the sidewalk. That's how close it was.
What has happened to society?
Well, now they're talking about giving people fines for walking and working your cell phone. Pedestrian fines for using your cell phone while walking downtown. You know, but at first it sounds kind of humorous, but I mean, think of a crowded city street. I mean, people can get killed.
Well, the worst thing I've ever seen, it doesn't really involve a cell phone, is some guy with a portable DVD player sitting on the dashboard of his car as you're driving down the interstate at 75 miles an hour. And he's got a DVD player.
Oh, right.
With a movie.
Yeah, not just sound, but watching.
Yeah, he's watching the damn movie.
Catching up on the latest episode, right? Whatever it is, reality show. Him being chased by the police or something, who knows? You know, what you're saying is so true about fake videos on our forum. We actually, I have to give a shout out to David Vincent on our forum here, who we get into it once in a while, but he actually pulled up a video called Utah UFO Solved. Now, I'm not sure if you've run across this Utah UFO, but it was a case where some filmmakers who were operating a drone claimed that they had picked up a UFO on the HD camera of their drone. And it's been going back and forth on the forum. I was kind of skeptical because of the way the object seemed to bank in kind of an aerodynamic way, whereas UFOs don't necessarily do that, at least not what we would think of as alien craft. And so he dug around and dug around, and so did I, and he came up with it first and posted it on the forum. And the way that the guy explains how it was faked, it makes perfect sense. But I wouldn't know otherwise. You need to be an expert these days to be able to tell the difference.
Well, sometimes it's obvious, too. There was a number of years ago, there was two guys in New Jersey who wanted to prove how credulous UFO witnesses were and UFO investigators were, so they attached the railroad flares to balloons. And what struck me about this whole thing was the witnesses described exactly what they saw. And they showed one of the videos on one of the news programs, and you can see the light flickering.
And the dripping, yeah.
No, the light was just flickering. And the woman and the host said, you know, well, you know, are they flashing their lights? And she said, no, it's passing behind trees. And so it was blocking out it momentarily, so it looked like it was flickering. And one of them, you know, it looked like the object just shot off into actually the New York City area. It just sort of disappeared, vanished over in just an instant. And I think it might have been Mark D'Antonio of MUFON said, yeah, the flare burned out. But then the guys, because they weren't getting the sort of reaction they wanted, they interjected themselves into the experiment by going out to interview people. And one of them was saying, well, yeah, we went out to get pizza and the thing came down and buzzed our car, which they were trying to get people to open up about what they'd seen. And the worst I saw was a reporter talking to a little girl sucking on a lollipop. Says, what do you think of the aliens? Nobody had mentioned aliens to the point of that reporter talking to a kid. And I thought, talk about lousy journalism, but it came out eventually that they thought they'd proved their experiment that UFO investigators were credulous, but there was a police officer who identified it that night, said, we think it's probably railroad flares. And I think Mark D'Antonio said that when he was shown the footage, he said, it's either Chinese lanterns or a railroad flare attached to a balloon. So, I mean, within moments of looking at the footage, the MUFON guy didn't say, oh, my God, this is the greatest film we've ever had. He explained what it was. Some of the people who saw it, what it was. The witnesses were explaining exactly what they had seen as opposed to interpreting it. The news media was interpreting it for everybody, and these two guys were injecting themselves into the story by trying to make it better than it was. And the point is that the witnesses were not credulous. The investigators were not credulous. The news media certainly was. And the guys running the experiment tainted their experiment by injecting themselves into it to change the course because they were not getting the results they wanted. They wanted to prove that UFO investigators were credulous. Right. And what they were proving is that they were very careful in what they were doing, much better than they would have been, the UFO investigators, but better than they were 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. They were looking at the data. They were not trying to find a flying saucer in every sighting. They were trying to find out what was seen and can we explain it in terrestrial terms. So the experiment failed in that respect.
Yeah, that's the that's the skeptics injecting their own bias into it. And they can be just as guilty as some of the people who are, I guess, the wide-eyed believers, I suppose.
Well, you look at Philip Klass coming up with explanations for sightings that just make no sense whatsoever. Take the Socorro landing. You know, Lonnie Zamora saw the spacecraft land in April of 1964 and then take off. Klass said, well, what was going on was the mayor of the town owned the property where the UFO landed, and he was trying to generate some kind of tourist attraction that would make the land more valuable.
Yeah, right. And just hired Lonnie Zamora to.
Well, Lonnie Zamora was a police officer. No, Lonnie Zamora was a police officer, so the mayor was his boss, so he got Lonnie Zamora to go along.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But the thing is, somebody actually went and looked at the tax records and found out the mayor didn't own the land. It was owned by the estate of some woman whose name escapes me. And the idea of a tourist attraction didn't come about until a year after it, where the city council says, maybe we can do something with this. So Klass's explanation didn't work, and yet, you know, there was an explanation for the case that made some of the skeptics happy. And you can look at any number of skeptical solutions, and Klass was great for coming up with solutions that had no relevance to the facts. And so you're absolutely correct when you say, you know, the skeptics are as bad as the true believers at the other end of the spectrum. Not the skeptics, but the debunkers as opposed to the true believers. I mean, the very opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, we need skepticism when we're looking at UFO sightings. We need skepticism to be throughout the investigations to make sure that we're following the right path, that we're not somehow being diverted into one camp or another. We want to know what the answer is as opposed to this was a flying saucer or this was not a flying saucer. We want to know what the actual answer is.
Absolutely. I'm not the least bit upset about a debunking if it happens to be reasonable and true and makes sense. That they're doing us a favor. No problem. And I completely have to agree with you that skepticism is essential if you're going to be a serious ufologist. Hey, have you got time for some questions from our forum people?
Absolutely.
All right. We've got one from Farley Goldstein. As a change of pace, please have some discussion on your book, Conversations, A Study in Hypnosis and Past Life Regression. Now, he says, evidently a woman thought she'd suffered an abduction experience and contacted you and
yes.
a hypnotist and had several sessions.
Yes.
And according to the book, the sessions appeared to indicate that the woman had past lives. And he asks, what do you think about hypnotized people tellings of supposed past lives?
Well, first of all, thank you for finding that book. I do not know why that book has not done better, because I, if nothing else, I always thought it was a good read. It's kind of an exciting book, and it brings in a lot of interesting things, especially looking at the history of serial killers and that sort of thing. It's a book that I thought should have done a lot better than it did. But he's absolutely right. That's what happened. A woman had contacted me who believed that she had been abducted, and it was freaking her out.
I'll tell you what, the advertisers
will
freak out if we don't do our break right now.
Ah.
Kevin, Gene Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-959-5759. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-959-5759. That's 1-800-959-5759. 1-800-959-5759.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
This is Kurt Sutton, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
Okay, we're talking about hypnosis, hypnotic regression, abductions. Kevin Randall, go ahead, please.
As I was saying, the book Conversations was about this woman who came, who contacted me and thought she'd been abducted. And this was in the 1990s. And it was a point where that was how you did abduction research. You got a hypnotist and took that, you used that person's expertise to kind of elicit the details of the abduction.
Right, like assisted memory recall.
Yeah, and so he and I had discussed what we were going to do up front, so that we were very careful not to lead the discussion, and realizing you have to be very careful in asking the questions, because even what seemed like the most innocuous question could lead the subject into a direction that we didn't want to do that. We wanted to be very careful with our questioning. And we were we visited her at her house, and her family was gone, so we for the evening, so we could conduct the hypnotic regressions. And as we got done with one of the sessions, and I forget now exactly how the question was phrased, but it came out that she was now in a past life. And as we continued to talk to her about this, it became clearer and clearer that she was touching on memories that she shouldn't have, or information she shouldn't have. In today's world, 2019, there's so much information bombarding you that you pick up bits and pieces of it without even realizing it. And the best example I have is, I was watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, one of the shows, and the question was about what was Hank Hill's occupation. I never watched the program, King of the Hill, but somehow I knew that it had to do with propane. The point is, you know, the information sort of out there in the osmosis, and I had sucked it up some way. Back then, you know, it wasn't quite as prevalent and easy to do that. So we were being very careful about that. And I ended up talking to her, and it seemed that she was remembering a time where she was working with Jack the Ripper, of all things. And so in today's environment, you could look at all this stuff very carefully and find it very easily. Back then, it would take an awful lot of library research to get it. And she was coming up with things that I'd never heard of. And we would go back and research it at the University of Iowa Library in their bound periodicals and all the materials they had there. And she was giving us some information that was really obscure and shouldn't have been available to her unless she had been doing the research. And we continued on with that, getting all sorts of interesting information from her. In today's world, you know, I worry about the efficacy of hypnotic regressions, because we now know, more so than we did then, how easy it is to lead someone, and how there's a phenomenon known as pleasing the operator, which means the subject wants to give answers that the hypnotist is kind of searching for. And I know if you go back and you read some of Bud Hopkins' transcripts, you can see him very, very subtly, and I don't think Bud Hopkins realized he was doing it. You can see him in his questions subtly nudging people in a specific direction. John Mack commented on that, saying that he was surprised at how the abductees seemed to find the abduction researcher who was taking them in a specific direction. In other words, the people who had an Eastern philosophy found John Mack. The people who had cold calculating alien abductees were finding Bud Hopkins. And those who were involved in this hybrid experimentation were finding David Jacobs. I kept wanting to say David Temple because he taught at Temple in Pennsylvania.
Okay, so the suggestion is that these people are sort of seeking out the particular therapist they most identify with.
Yes, and of course, the flip of that was, no, the operator was actually subtly feeding them the information they want and getting what they want out of the sessions. And so we have to be careful of that. So we were looking for abduction, and all of a sudden this woman is giving us a past life regression, and we were able to explore that. And that's what Conversations is about. And that's why I chose the title Conversations as opposed to Investigations or something more dramatic, you know, Conversations with this woman. But the point is, she was having trouble sleeping. She was having some real stress in her life because of these images. And if nothing else, we were able to remove that stress from her life and calm her down. And we left it. We didn't tell her. We didn't let her listen to the sessions. We didn't tell her what we'd found in the sessions after each one, because we didn't want to influence the next one. And we said, when we're done, when we're finished with the research here, you know, you can have access to everything. It's yours. And you can look at it if you want, or you can ignore it if you want. But when we found out that she wasn't really being abducted, and that somebody had kind of told her that's what the problem was, and we were able to eliminate that, and we were able to sort of eliminate these nightmarish images she was having as well. And that, I think, if nothing else, we accomplished that. But it was a very interesting time, and I always thought the book should do better than it did, because I thought, if nothing else, it's kind of an exciting book that gives you a look at this history of serial killers and some of these other things that are related to past life regressions. I don't know, in today's world, I don't know how she would have known some of the things that she did if it was, like I said, if it was 2019 that this was going on. And we have access to everything now very easily. Just have to figure out the right question to ask to get the answers to what you want to do. But at that time, the information wasn't that easily available. You had to really search to find it. And there's no indication she was searching to find the information. So I'm, you know, in my very skeptical mode, I say that there was something else going on, that she was getting the information somewhere else. She may not have been searching it out, but she was drawing on something somewhere that she knew. Or, you know, if you want to be more, you want to take a more believer point of view, she was accessing these past memories. I just, you know, it's one of those things I don't have a real good answer for, but it's an interesting story. And I'm glad that somebody actually read that book. Thank you. And please put a nice review up on Amazon.
I like how you're certainly noncommittal about the idea that it was an actual past life, because even if a person is having what they believe are memories of events that can be verified that they shouldn't know about, that still doesn't necessitate that they're accessing a memory from a past life. I think there's a lot of problems with just that idea. At best, all that we can do is say that there's been some sort of information transfer take place, and we don't know how it happened.
Now, the other thing I want to ask here, one thing I want to ask Kevin.
Well, let me just say this. Let me just say this, that the thing is, I could find the information to verify it. And if I could find it, then she could have gotten to it somehow as well. There's no indications that she did anything like that. And as I said, I was using the resources of the University of Iowa Library, so you know I had access to that. But anybody who can walk into the building and have access to the University of Iowa. So, yeah, there was some kind of information transfer going on. I could never find the link. But as I say, the thing that we have to keep in mind is if I could find the information to verify what she was saying, then it would be possible for her to find it as well. So there we are.
Gene, you were about to say something there.
Yeah, it's possible. I thought in some cases maybe someone in her family was talking about it. They read something. You see, the first time I heard about this past life stuff was when Long John Neville was talking with the author of The Search for Bridie Murphy, which is one of the classic cases of so-called pre-life memories or reincarnation. But I tend to think here, that always seemed to me a stretch. Why, even if the information is accurate, somebody lived years ago, meeting the description that came up in these strange memories or hypnotic regressions, that doesn't mean that it's reincarnation. It means that, as you would suggest, it's tapped into information that was available. Also, when it comes to reincarnation, the logic seems strange here, which is if you have to come back because you didn't fulfill your goals or you were not a good enough person, if you don't remember what you did wrong, aren't you destined to repeat the same thing again? A point of logic. We got more to come with Kevin Randall, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items, and entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Pain in my neck, back, and shoulders has really gotten worse.
Relief for body pain is here with Sunny Bay Heating Pads.
Well, the last thing I want is to take another pill, so what's so good about Sunny Bay Heating Pads?
Sunny Bay Heating Pads, made by Biomed DB Design right here in the USA, come in all sizes. Our extra-large microwavable heating pad for back pain is designed to be large enough to cover your entire back. It's also perfect to wrap around your legs, knees, or shoulder and neck.
But I need to know they're good quality.
Of course, Sunny Bay heating pads and pillows are often an Amazon choice. And it's easy and most affordable when you purchase your Sunny Bay heating pads right from our website, sunshinepillows.com. Or call us, 253-678-1361.
Hey, a Sunny Bay heating pad
would make a great gift, right?
Yes, and they start at just $19.99 and free shipping is available. So call 253-678-1361 or shop for your Sunny Bay heating pad at sunshinepillows.com.